Blog Talk Radio.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by Xerox in 4 parts without commercial interruptions. The revolution will not show you pictures of Nixon blowing a bugle and leading a charge by John Mitchell, General Abrams, and Spiro Agnew to eat hog maws confiscated from a Harlem sanctuary. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be brought to you by the shape of a war theater and will not star Natalie Woods and Steve McQueen or Bullwinkle and Julia. The revolution will not give your mouth sex appeal. The revolution will not get rid of the nub. The revolution will not make you look 5 pounds thinner because the revolution will not be televised, brother. There will be no pictures of you and Willie Mae pushing that shopping cart down the block on the dead run or trying to slide that color TV into a stolen ambulance. NBC will not be able to predict the winner at 8:32 on the court from 29 districts. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of pigs shooting down brothers on the instant replay. There will be no pictures of Whitney Young being run out of Harlem on the rail with a brand new process. There will be no slow motion or still life of Roy Wilkins strolling through Watts in a red, black, and green liberation jumpsuit that he has been saving for just the proper occasion. Green Acres, Beverly Hillbillies, and Hooterville Junction will no longer be so damn relevant, and women will not care if Dick finally got down with Jane on Search for Tomorrow, because black people will be in the street looking for a brighter day. The revolution will not be televised. There will be no highlights on the 11 o'clock news and no pictures of Harry R. Woman Liberationist and Jackie Onassis blowing her nose. The theme song will not be written by Jim Webb or Francis Scott Key, nor sung by Glenn Campbell, Tom Jones, Johnny Cash, Engelbert Humperdinck, or The Rare Earth. The revolution will not be televised. The revolution will not be right back after a message about a white tornado, white lightning, or white people. You will not have to worry about a dove in your bedroom, the tiger in your tank, or the giant in your toilet bowl. The revolution will not go better with Coke. The revolution will not fight germs that may cause bad breath. The revolution will put you in the driver's seat. The revolution will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised, will not be televised. The revolution will be no rerun, brothers. The revolution will be live.
Hello, and welcome to Provocative Thought, intimately known as PT, striving to awaken those who are asleep, stimulate those who are awakened, feed those who are starving, and nurture those who seek to know. I am your host, Carlton Steed, a self-proclaimed student of life in the search, discovery, and revelation of life on life's terms. First, I'd like to thank We Talk Productions for allowing me to host this show. I'd also like to thank the creator for allowing me to be. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can contact the show by dialing 909-265-9215. Please press the number 1 to speak. You can reach us on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to search, type in We Talk Productions, and listen to the show live. You can also contact us on Facebook at Provocative Thought PT Community Organization. Tonight's topic, what do African Americans want? Do they have a vision? It's well documented that the African American has been subjected to slavery racism, oppression, injustice, poverty, mass incarceration, and police brutality. Some of our neighborhoods have become chaotic death traps. Some of us have managed to maintain a sense of moral and ethical strength, while others have fallen to the plagues of the community. What do African Americans want for themselves? Do African Americans have a collective? I'm going to go to the quote from the poet Noor. They say that there is strength in numbers. In numbers, there is strength. Is there an African American collective consciousness and connection? Do we care enough to change us, to strengthen us, to protect us from all enemies within and abroad, spiritual and physical? Do we feel worthy of such a revolution? Success. Everyone likes to be successful. No one likes to fail. Shall we measure success by the systemic failure of others for the benefit of a few, or the ability of individuals to systemically perpetuate the success and goodwill of others? Resources. Shall we take what is not ours, hold life ransom for profit, or shall we profit from sharing and perpetuating life and life resources? Love. Shall we love to destroy that which is created to love, or learn to love that which is created to be loved? Offspring. Shall we give birth to blind seed, or shall we be a beacon of light to their world? Life. Shall we live life, or shall we die because of our living? Death. Better to die for a cause than to die just because. There are some things that the African American is required to do in order to bring his people to be perpendicular. African Americans must raise themselves from a horizontal plane to a 90-degree angle. It is past time to evolve from our infant state of existence, a system that man is truly dependent upon is nature. The most powerful men cannot escape his dependency on nature. A system that creates, perpetuates oppression and dependency is a system of enslavement. You may be subjected to degrees of oppression and dependency, but your mind, your will is forever free. You cannot raise others if you remain on your hands and knees in the grave. Rise. From Provocative Thought. At first, we wanted freedom and an end to our captors, enslavement, and torture. We wanted 40 acres and a mule. We wanted acceptance, respect. We wanted to be like our oppressor. We wanted to attend white schools. We wanted to vote. We wanted jobs, education, and representation under the law. We wanted to use the same toilet. We wanted to assimilate. Some wanted to segregate. We wanted a connection with our ancestors. We wanted to return to Africa. We wanted unity among African Americans. We wanted an end to police brutality and lynching. We wanted political office. We wanted money, wealth, power, fame, some at any means necessary. We wanted the party and bullshit. Where has it taken us? The Atlantic. What black voters want? With the 2018 and 2020 elections on the horizon, race and racism are becoming ever larger issues amongst the most marginalized communities in America, making the Democratic coalition harder and harder to hold. This is from Van R. Newkirk II, 2018. In 2018, black voters are finding out just what the hell they had to lose. There's a whole article. I just took this off snippet of the article. Nazis and Klansmen march openly and proudly, and hate crimes appear to be on the rise. Police killings of people, especially black people, remain largely the same year to year, and this interaction of the Justice Department has largely abdicated any federal responsibility inducing brutality. An infant mortality crisis is tightening up its grip on the most marginalized communities across many economic matrices. From evictions to general wealth and segregation, disparities are either stagnating or trending in the wrong direction. 50 years after the Kerner Composition Report said the country was moving toward two societies, one black, one white, separate and equal. The prophecy has been all but fully realized, says Mr. Newkirk from Newsweek's John Saul, 2017. Police in the U.S. killed 1,129 people so far in 2017. He wrote this in 1229. So I think that, you know, I guess they killed some people in the mother days, you know. And a quarter of those killed were black, even though they comprise just 13% of the population, according to the new report. In addition to being 25% of the victims, black people are also three times likely to be killed by police as white, according to the report, Mapping Police Violence, which was released on Thursday. From PolitiFact, Tampa Bay Times, Amy Sherman. It's 2015. Just a idea of the homicide rate. 2009, the percent 91% black on blacks murdered by each other. 2010, 90% of the murders, the homicides. 2011, 91%. 2012, 91%. 2013, 90%. Oddly enough, percentage of white murders by whites is not far off. 2009, 84%, 2010, 83%, 2011, 83%, 2012, 84%, 2013, 83%. So there's an increase in white-on-white homicide also, which is also alarming. From the magazine, what's holding blacks back? This guy, Mr. John H. McWhorter, he's an associate professor of English and comparative literature at Columbia University. He says it's black attitude, not white racism. That's to blame. So blacks have sabotaged themselves through victimology, the study of the victims of crime and the and the psychological effects on them and their experience. That's how crime impacts on you mentally and I guess psychologically. So these beliefs, rather than what remains of racism itself, he says, what remains of racism are the biggest obstacle to further black progress in today's America, and all are either upright myths or severe distortions of the truth. So he says that these beliefs of about being a victim, says that some people are overplaying this the hand about being a victim of an American society. I don't know how you can overplay that based on the information that I've heard, but this guy is saying that people, I guess he's saying it's scapegoating it about, you know, just leaning on it too much. Anyway, I'm just going to go over some of the things he talked about, he mentioned. He said, one, most black people are poor, and middle-class blacks are statistical noise. Almost half of the black survey in a Gallup poll supposed that 3 out of 4 black people live in inner cities. Yet, in 2001, most black people are neither poor nor even close to it. By any estimation, middle-class blacks outnumber poor ones. And at last count, only 1 in 5 blacks live in the inner city. from black demographics. 27% of all African American men, women, and children live below the poverty level compared to just 11% of all Americans. The second thing he said was that black people earn 61% of what whites do. Though accurate as a nationwide median in 1995, this figure is dragged down by the disproportionate number of single black welfare mothers. Black two-parent families earn 87% of what white two-parent families earn in 1995. Also, distorting the median is the disproportionate number of blacks who live in the South, where wages are lower overall. If you look only at specific areas rather than at the nation as a whole, black household earnings in 1994 exceeded whites in 130 cities and counties across the nation. From NPR 2017, Adrian Foley, Florida. In 2013, the median white family held 13 times as much net wealth as the median black family and 10 times as much wealth as the median Latino family, according to the Federal Reserve Survey of Consumer Finances. The reasons for this are multiple and well documented, she said. They start at slavery and traverse the historical and deliberate exclusion of people of color from the economic institutions and government programs that help white Americans build wealth and pass it on to successive generations. Segregation and redlining by banks made it impossible for many blacks and Latino families to secure mortgages, for example. The GI Bill, which helped establish an American middle class by helping veterans pay for college and buy homes after World War II, mostly excluded people of color. The NPR is saying they had a head start. So when somebody has a head start, they usually are ahead of you, especially if they, you know, don't slow down. So nobody's going to stop, let you catch up with them. Three, an epidemic of racist church burnings has swept across the South. Now, I don't know why he said that's a myth, because that makes no sense, since there were never, he said there was never such thing. About 80 black churches were burnt from 1990 to 1996. I call that an epidemic. But then over seven times that many white churches burned as well. What does that have to do with it being an epidemic of black churches burning? So I'm in total disagreement with him with the epidemic thing. 80 churches burning, that's a problem. Especially if it's white folks burning them. Four, the CIA created the inner cities by pumping drugs into them. Well, we know the CIA didn't create inner cities because they were created around the Industrial Revolution, things like that. But I think he's referring to the modern, more contemporary times, the elements in the inner city. I can't speak for this guy because I don't even know him, but he can't be meaning that. This one pops up in pamphlet after pamphlet at leftist marches and gatherings. It is taught to many black college students, but the San Jose Mercury's charges on this score prove false. Yes, some CIA agents aiding the Nicaraguan Contras decided to look the other way and allow them to profit from some drug sales in California. Some drug sales in California. Read the story about Rick Ross. And sounds like he's minimizing that whole situation. But that's hardly a plot to addict blacks in all of America's inner cities. So I never heard heard of it, what he's talking about here. CIA created inner cities. But it's documented that they did pump drugs into inner cities. And then a lot of black people live in these inner cities at the time that they did it. So make your own research, come to your own conclusion. The United States Census says that New York City had the largest number of people reporting as black, with about 2.3 million, followed by Chicago, 1.1 million, and Detroit, Philadelphia, and Houston, which had between 500,000 and a million each black people. Among places with 100,000 or more population, black population, Gary had the highest percentage of people reporting as black, 85%, followed by Detroit with 83%. Number five, he said. That's a lot of black people living in the inner city. That's what I get. That's the point there. He's not making that point. That point being made by the United States Census, and I brought that to my listeners' attention. Provocative thought. Another thing, he says that because black men are disproportionately incarcerated, racism reigns eternal. I never even heard that phrase either. But let's go into what he's saying. The belief assumes that blacks do not commit crimes any more frequently than whites. But if black men make up almost 50% of the prison population, they committed roughly 42% of violent crimes in the 1990s. And many studies have shown that when severity of crime and past records are taken into account, there is no bias against blacks in the criminal justice system. At its inception, the war on drugs is often interpreted as a war on blacks, had the strong support of Congressional Black Caucus, whose members aim to stem inner-city violence. Of these black officials, who at the time exhorted Congress to save our community, they went to the Congress saying, save our black community, right, were racist, then the definition of this term is beyond my comprehension. So, provocative thoughts saying to that, black legislators on a political agenda simply indicates that those black legislators, for whatever reason, co-signed the racist agenda. Maybe it seemed right at the time to them. Maybe they didn't get it. Maybe they didn't care. Six, profiling is racism. Racial profiling is racism. Well, that's kind of like self-explanatory in its own definition. Racial profiling is racism. What do you mean? Like, anyway, he said it can be, but it's just as often isn't. I don't get that. In some parts of the country, black men are so overrepresented in the criminal activities that police officers, white and black, would be shrieking from their duty not to concentrate on them. Really? I thought you're supposed to concentrate on the people who are committing crimes, not because of the color of their skin. But this is the black guy that wrote this shit too, because I researched him. He is black. He's a dark-skinned brother. And that's right. I don't even understand that. Sure, sometimes profiling ends up detaining more blacks than the rate of conviction for the targeted crimes justifies, as with drivers recently stopped and searched for drugs in New Jersey. But even here, officers generally have acted less out of race hatred than out of pragmatic assessment that they can fill their quotas faster by focusing on a group that commits a disproportionate share of crime. That's very interesting, because if you're focusing on a specific group, then you're going to have more people from that group involved in the criminal justice system. And you add with that, not all people that they focus on are guilty of a criminal act. And then you add on to that you're harassing people, and some people just not having it, then they get charged with a crime because they're standing up for themselves against these guys trying to make their quota. So that's a problem there. And sometimes those situations turn into some lethal situations, or can. Appropriate, yes. Widely condemned as such. Indication number 674, that racism is on the wane. So I don't know. Where did this guy write this thing? I don't know, because most recent articles say racism is on the rise. So Provocative Thought said, that's a no-brainer. Why the focus on blacks? If they focus on white suspects, wouldn't there be an increase in white incarceration if they were arrested and convicted? Come on now. They said white guys are more likely to get breaks when they interact with the law. You know, God might let them go, get lesser penalties and less time and stuff like that. So I don't know about this. I don't know what this guy's where he's trying to go with this year. I have always, he said he's always suspected that today's profiling must stop. Contingent secretly believes that the whites deserve black crime as retribution for oppression. I don't even know what that means. But to halt all profiling, he says, would increase the number of blacks murdered, mostly by other blacks. So if they stop profiling blacks, what if you're profiling guy because of the color of skin, you stopping a guy that's not involved in that kind of stuff. You stop 10 guys that's not involved in that. That's a waste of time when you could be getting it up with some people that you know. Because if you're a police officer in a certain area, you should know who's out there like that. You know what I'm saying? You should be able to, you should have more sense than to, oh, he's black, I'm going to stop him. That don't even make sense. Know the people you serving. Know the people that you need to be taking a look at, else you're wasting your time being on the police force. Anyway, they said it happened in New York in the 1980s. Scott, cops turned a blind eye to a wave of black crime. How you getting paid to combat crime and you turning an eye to crime? That don't even make sense. That's like I'm going to work, but I ain't working because somebody complained about how I do my work. That doesn't make sense. You don't have the right to racially profile somebody and just look at everybody like they're a criminal because they're black. In a high crime area, what do you mean by that? It's crime all over the United States and these so-called rich areas too. It's just that you guys not bum rushing these guys the way you rush these poor people that's not able to get representation. So there is an epidemic of white-on-white homicides also. So read it, check it out. It's not a secret. A lot of white homicides to the point that, you know, it's epidemic proportion, just like the black-on-black crime thing. Why the news media is not covering that, I don't know. But that does not take away from black-on-black crime or police violence towards African-Americans. Number seven, he says the excessive police brutality against blacks shows that racism reigns eternal. I ain't never heard that saying, but we're going to keep going. I just use this as a focal point of holding a conversation. Certainly, blacks have suffered greater police brutality than whites, but this constitutes not the prevalence of overt racism, but its last holdout. He said that the police, some police, the actions of some police that appear to be racist is the last holdout for the racism. How many of y'all believe that? It's just the police department that's holding out with all this racist stuff. Well, how are these guys getting off? Don't they go through the court system and do you have legislation and backing police and stuff like that? I don't know. This is an educated brother, too. I don't understand why he's saying that, but disagree with that, too. So he says that this constitution not the prevalence of overt racism, but its last holdout. As Orlando Patterson argued, you'd expect racism to persist longest precisely among undereducated keepers of order working under conditions likely to spark impulsiveness. You know what I say to that, right? Get off the police force. You can't stand the heat, get out of the kitchen. All right? He uses an example about the brother that was sodomized in New York by the police, beaten and sodomized, tortured, beaten, sodomized with a broken end of a broom handle by police officers in New York City Police Department. He said, black officers have been involved in similar cases across the country, though such cases don't get headlines in the liberal media. Does that take away from what's happening to black people by white officers? No. And why it's not being covered by the so-called liberal media, I don't know. I don't have no answer to that. But I tell you what, that does not take away from what happened to that brother in New York by those officers who were white. Individuals and the criminal justice system, black and white, racism, authoritarianism, are attributes of the corruption. So these police are committing acts and different strokes to different folks. You might have a racist cop. You might have some kind of freakish kind of guy in there. You may have a guy who likes men, a guy who likes to rape women, a guy likes to rape particularly black women, guy likes to, you know, you might have all kinds of strokes in there. Police officers, I don't know why they try to look at police officers like they're not people first. They are human beings first. Police officers second, maybe third down the line, I don't know. But they are not police officers first. They lie, they cheat, they murder, and they become angry, and they make mistakes just like the rest of us that end up in jail for doing the same thing. Is the author implying that police are victims of working under conditions likely to spark impulsiveness? Because that's what that sounds like. Sounds like he's saying they are victims. They're under trained and in these conditions that spark impulsiveness. Well, you know what? Like I said, you don't need to be on the job. Police killing should alarm anybody. One person injured or murdered by lawless officers is one too many. You understand that Tamir Rice situation? Guy just got out of his car and shot a 12-year-old with a toy gun. The last time I looked, there's no law against selling toy guns, no law against 12 years old being on the street playing with their toy gun. So why did this guy come up? Why was it okay for this police officer to just come up and almost get out of this car and shoot this kid? It's a problem. That's impulsiveness, cost somebody their life? I think not. That's unacceptable. Another brother was shot in Walmart buying a BB gun. Somebody called the police on them. Police killings. Again, get off the police force if you cannot perform in a safe, responsible, humane, and professional manner. We don't care about the conditions being likely to spark impulsiveness. Get off the force. You know that before you join the police force. You think soldiers are going out there? There's a lot of guys that are put in situations where people have the same thing they carrying around. These police officers, some of the people you shooting, toy guns. Come on, these guys, soldiers are put in highly volatile situations. They gotta perform. Come on now, some of you guys are ex-military. Come on now, killing a guy with a toy gun, unarmed people. Come on, that's crazy. Sticking broomsticks up people's behinds. Come on. It's ridiculous. But we have a caller. Welcome to Provocative Thought.
Hey, what's up, Carly?
What's up, Kenny?
How you doing?
I'm doing all right, brother.
I remember that incident. It happened in Brooklyn in the late 90s, early 2000s. His name was, he was a Haitian young man.
Haitian, brother.
Name? Yeah, and things has not stopped. I don't know why. You remember when President Obama got elected the first time, and everybody quickly said, racism is dead. Finally, racism is gone and whatnot. Racism didn't go anywhere. In fact, racism, like you always say, is more institutionalized. And the power structure and prejudice, they just suppressed it or tolerated. Now more and more individuals and different groups are coming out with their prejudices. That's all. And as far as police, and you know how I feel about the police. And it would never stop. It would never stop. I don't care, because as long as our society is made up the way it is, we will always have these issues with police brutality and with police violence. And let me tell you something. I lived in that first neighborhood before. I didn't feel safe. Because I was scared. I'm a commuter. I was scared well, a police car ride by me. I said, I hope I don't fit this description. First thing I said, I hope I don't fit this. Hey, look, that young man that got shot in Missouri, he got shot. He got killed. And the police officer was asked, why did you shoot him? He looked like a bad dude.
Oh, he got out of the car? You mean he said he went his ID? He went back in the car to get his ID?
Yeah, he looked like a bad dude. Wow.
Oh, the guy
really?
On the highway.
Yeah.
Which guy
he
you talking
looked
about?
Like a,
there's a couple of
them. Okay, it's a couple of them. It was in Missouri. You know, he was coming out the store. He was coming out the store, and I think there was a complaint by a store owner, but the officer went to the wrong store. And he saw this dude coming out the store, and he shot him because he looked like a bad dude.
Hmm.
Really? Oh, I remember.
And so what happened as a result of that? Was he was
he
that in the commission of his job? Was that a justified shooting in the commission of his job because somebody made
a
call
a
and he was responding? That don't make sense.
He looked like a bad dude, and the dude did not have a weapon. Like he was at the wrong store. I can remember you talk about Jersey. In the 80s, man, they stopped 86. I remember it was in the New York Times on the New York Daily News. It was talk about epidemic. 86% of African American drivers on the New Jersey Turnpike was stopped by New Jersey State Troopers. And don't have a nice automobile back
right.
then. And now with these cats driving Bentleys and Jaguars, are you kidding me? So it's really as long as we are living the way we live, it will always be like this. Nothing will change. Matter of fact, it will get worse before it get better. And now they have calm blood. Huh?
This guy's saying it's almost over. The last stronghold is the police department.
How about the criminal justice system? How about the education system? How about housing? How about housing? How about gentrification? You know,
how about the legislative branches of government supporting all of those?
Last year, when law enforcement had their convention, Trump was invited to speak, and he gave the order to kick those thugs, you know what.
Right.
And you know what he meant by thugs. It's a cold right. word. It's a cold word. That is the type of atmosphere we're living in. I know there are some people. Hey, you know what? We got to share the blame, too. Some of it is our fault.
Right.
You know, as you started off, talk about all the stuff we was doing and trying
right.
to achieve and whatnot. If we would have stayed on the path from the early 70s, having our own political party, have our own schools, but see, these black politicians, these black corporate leaders, I mean, great. We have more of them. But what are they doing for the man they left behind?
Yeah, what good is a black face in politics if it's not making any changes? I don't get it.
Look, they talk a good game. They talk a good game. But do they follow up? But we keep on making the same mistakes over and over and over again. I don't care if the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000, and 2020. We keep on making the same. And look, we talk about pro-black, black economics, but do people still, do Do black folks really do business with each other?
Really? Come on. Just look at it.
There's hardly any black businesses to do business with. You understand what I'm saying?
But there's more and more black entrepreneurs today with these millennials. I mean, they're changing the way. They don't want jobs. They want their own businesses. They want to be entrepreneurs.
Yeah, where are the businesses? They ain't in the community. You know, my community don't have no black stores in it.
Well, that's the problem. You mean to tell me two or three black folks can't get together get a store? Yeah, they can start a store or whatnot. But when black folks patronize it, or when they go to the Arab, or when they go to the Indian, or when they go to the Asian, or when they go to the white man and get them the money, $1.3 trillion we spend. $1.3 trillion. Less than 1 cent comes back to the black community. If just 50% of $1.3 trillion come back to the black community, we could address issues ourselves. You don't see police going up in the Hasidic Jews community and shooting their kids down. You don't see them going to the Asian community and shooting them down. Well, you
well,
have
how many Hasidic Jews are selling crack houses and things like that?
Well, they do. I mean, in certain cities, they do. I mean, drugs don't know no color. I mean, they do, and there's greed in every culture. But what I'm saying is that the establishment and the system that we live in respect cultures that have their own destiny in hand. And most of the destiny has to come through economic power, empowerment. And that's where we have to start looking. Do we have to work with politicians? Yes. Do we have to work with other cultures and institutions? Yes. But when you have your own economic power, you get respect in the society. And that's what I am observing. You know, why do cops don't like Asian folks and Jews and other cultures. But you'll see them run up in their community, shooting them down like they do our community, whether it's a middle class black community or a low income black community or project. But like I
that's
said,
that's true. You don't hear about it, and I'm sure that maybe it's the type of crime that
if it happens. If it, look what happened. They made a big thing out of this white girl getting run over by a car. It was there for police brutality. No, social injustice. When white girl got run over by a car, they made a big thing out of it. It was on the TV for a whole week until the next crisis. If that would have been a black girl, you know, nothing would have been said or done. They would say, it should have been there. It should have been there. Well, what I'm trying to say is that all this marching and all this begging, I keep on saying, I know you got to work with your local and state politicians. I know, especially if you need permits and certifications and licenses. But when you have to continue to ask the different legislatures from the White House, the city hall and the state house, can we do this? Is it all right? It's just like ask the master, can we get off the plantation for overnight, a 48-hour pass? So we have to change
that's
our
what
mind.
When you're not in power. That's what happens.
Yeah, that's what happens. We keep on making the same mistakes. And what happened to the Black Lives Matter movement? What happened to, the NAACP is still doing this strategy as they did in the 40s, stressing the court system. Now, what did Malcolm say about the United States court system? How can you go to a system and ask for justice when that same system does not provide you equality? I'll paraphrase it, but it was something like that. This is the same system that got the laws to hold you down, how can you go there and say, oh, can I have my freedom? Can I have equality?
Right. And see, that's what this guy's saying. This guy's saying that you are riding on the coattails of being a victim a little too much. You overplaying that. He's saying that it's just a little bit too much of that going on.
I mean, we are victims, but like I said, we had our hand in it too. You know, we had our hand in it too. We fought, you know, we looking for the next key. We looking for the next Malcolm and Marcus and all that. What we need to do is, again, fix our educational system, put more cultural awareness in our educational system, especially in our neighborhoods. Empower ourselves economically, and you know what? And forget them. Forget their approval. Let's do it for ourselves. But again, you use a word that I use all the time, assimilation. We always trying to assimilate. We always trying to be like them. Let's be us.
So there's, before we can even make these big moves, in my opinion, we need to make these small moves. Small moves,
right.
Little things grow to be bigger, giant, and, you know, massive things. You understand what I'm saying? So in order to change our community, we have to change our own minds. These individuals have to make a decision about, you know, their own thinking and how they're going to address their present state. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and the thing is, how is that done? You know, we have to not be afraid to have these discussions, have these workshops. Have these things. White folks have think tanks all the time. How come we can't have our own black think tanks about the situation we're talking about now? Changing one mind. First of all,
we're having a think tank right now, me and you. I mean, we got another caller.
Right.
So it's going to be me, you, and the next caller. So, and whoever's listening. Because even though you may not be speaking on the show, if you hear this, you have to be thinking. Right?
Right.
So we're having a think talk, and this is not the only blog that people listen to. So I think we have these things, but what we're not doing is, like you're saying, we're not coming together, you know, outside of a situation like the ones that we have, like today, or individual people that we generally talk to. You know what I'm saying?
And the
so, you know, you're right.
The original question that you asked in the beginning of the show, you said, are we making improvements collectively? My response is no. Individually, a lot of brothers and sisters is kicking butt out there. You know, they're kicking butt. But Reagan is concerned, Reagan came up with this term. Where's the trickle down? Where's the trickle down? How is you being making progress is helping the community?
Okay, let me get a next call, Kenny.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Hold on, just hold on, bro. Caller, welcome to Provocative Thought. Hello?
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Hello, can you hear me? Yeah, this is Q.
Yes. Q.
Hey,
How you doing, Kenny? And hello, listening. All right, I was just going to say what you were going to say about the smaller things we have to address first. And I assume that to mean our own community. Because we haven't been the same since the 60s and the 70s. That whole drug and gang thing just, I don't know, it's kind of gutted our whole community. And that's why our community is like upstanding, going to work every day. And then we have another part of our community who's embraced that whole gang thing and, you know, that everything that goes along with that.
Right.
I don't know.
Kill or be killed kind of concept about, you know, how I'm living, you know, how I'm dying. I'm dying the same way I'm living is the way that I'm dying. Kill or be killed, you know, which is ridiculous.
Right. Amongst other things,
everybody has to die.
Right. I said amongst other
too
things,
much of that. Yeah.
I got too much of that. The street thing is you give it too much, I don't know, too much control. Hello?
Okay, so do you think that the police department is the last refuge of racism in America? Like this brother saying in his article that I'm reading?
Yeah, I have no idea what he's saying. It don't make any sense to me. But when they get to court, whoever's shooting the black person seems like to me, in a lot of cases they can't be convicted. All I have to say is something about being afraid, fear for their life or something like that, and it seems like everybody can agree, oh yeah, well you should have shot that person for that.
Yeah.
Them being black and scaring you, it should have been shot.
Right.
So
right.
It seems like that racism is there as well.
Right. And we're not saying that white people don't get unarmed white people don't get murdered by police either, because they do. But what we're saying is that, huh?
I haven't heard of any.
Yeah, well, they do. No, it was a black police officer. They had a car chase with a white guy, and he had a kid in the back seat. By the time this guy stopped, they got out. They shot. The guy had his hands out the window, right? And they shot him, and they couldn't see the kid, but the kid was killed in the back seat. I think he got 40 years. They had an incident where SWAT raided a house. There was a grandmother and a 7-year-old girl. They shot the 7-year-old girl in the head. The guy got acquitted in court. The SWAT officer, I think he said something about the grandma was caused that situation to happen. The little old lady, I guess, manhandled the SWAT guy's rifle and shot the girl. You know, you got to pull the trigger to shoot. You understand what I'm saying?
Right.
So what is your hand doing? You know what I'm saying? Why are you on the trigger for an old lady and a 7-year-old sleeping girl?
Eleanor Bumpus,
you know,
first grandmother I knew from the Bronx that was shot by police. Eleanor Bumpus, they don't care. But this one happened to be a black individual, though.
Right. So, you know, so racism is live and kicking, as I said in one of my other shows. And, you know, the point is, we know all of that, and we know black people being targeted. And now here we got a black man that doesn't even mind the police department racially profiling black people. You understand what I'm saying? So that's just one black man saying that. So, you know, seems like we have a pretty big problem here going on. You know, in October 1996, the Oakland, California, Huey P. Newton, Bob Seeley founded the Black Panther Party for self-defense. And I was reading some of the what things they said they wanted, and it sounded like, wow, is this 1996?
Nothing has changed. I told you that in the beginning.
Because it feels that way from reading about what they said they want. It's like, yo, what's this? Freedom from all systems of oppression, aggression, regression of power to determine the destiny of our black community. We want gainful employment. We want to end the systemic rape, robbery, incarceration, murder of black brothers and sisters. We want into narcissistic. This is the point that I don't see stressed that much nowadays. We want to end to the narcissistic capitalistics that prey on all communities. It's at all communities. You understand? They didn't say just black community. They said all communities, especially those of our black and oppressed communities. We want decent housing. We want ability to provide education for our people. Some of these things we can do on our own. We just take the initiative, take some time out to help each other. Some of these things we can do. We can't do nothing about the narcissistic capitalist at ground zero, you know. But we can work towards dealing with that by educating our people. You know what I'm saying? We want the ability to provide education for our people. We want responsible, accountable representation. Good luck with that. You know what I'm saying? Because they just talk about the Black Caucus co-sign on the war against drugs. You know what I'm saying? We want to end the police brutality and murder. Well, we just talked about that, right? It's happening. It's going down. And police can murder you and just say, I was fearful. Oh, I thought he had a gun. You know,
well,
and they
like
get off, you know. Yeah, you look like a bad guy. Like, something's wrong with this picture. We want to end the black-on-black crime in our community. For the people who say that, this is 1966, we was crying about demanding an end on black-on-black crime in our community. And we know that has risen since 1966. Anytime you got a gun, right, with that shoots over 11 times, right, 40 caliber, 9mm, that's going to increase the level of lethality. When you increase the level of lethality, you increase the level of retribution, because now you know you were going to kill somebody. So now you kill somebody, now somebody's going to kill you, and that just goes back and forth. This group against that group and so forth like that. We want to end to self-degradation and misogynist ideologies. Isn't that what's going on right now?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What in the world?
We're going back.
What kind of moves did we make? Did we step backwards?
No. Yeah. No. I'm going to tell you something. Nothing has changed. It has been disguised a little better. That's all. I hate to be the voice of gloom and doom. I really don't want to be the voice of gloom. I want to be the voice of positivity. I want to be the voice of, like, yes, we can do it. But what I'm seeing with my own eyes and hearing with my own ears, I just don't know. I mean, people say we came a long way, but we still got the same platform that we did in 1968. And this is 2018. Isn't that
2008,
like
2008? 19, really? It's December.
Yeah. Yep.
This was written in 1966.
1966. Wow.
I could have wrote this last night, and yeah. it would still be applicable. You understand what I'm saying?
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. You know, hey, I think that, I just want to say this. I think we all, each person, this would never happen. I mean, living in a dream world, I was about to say, each brother and sister in the United States should look in the mirror every morning. What can I do for my community today? Instead of, how can I get some money? I mean, yeah, you got to get some cash flow. You got to do that to live. But that cannot be, like, your only reason for existing. You know? And that's why other blacks around the world, I talk to, you know, Carson, I talk to blacks around the world, man. They have a hard time respecting us. Because we letting stuff happen and not doing anything about it.
All right. You got 90 seconds.
They used to follow us. Okay. You know, their eyes used to be on us. In 1966, all eyes used to be on us.
Man.
Now we're being laughed.
It's sad, man. It's sad to read this. To read this from the Black Panther Party. From 1966, and for it to be still applicable to now, to contemporary times, it's sad. That says something about us, you know. And I know we're being bombarded by a lot of things that's out of our control that they are bombarding us with, but we do not have to accept everything that's being thrown at us. You
right.
know what I'm saying? We have to change, you know, at the individual level in order to make bigger changes.
Hey, tell the audience about Black Earth America on Tuesday night at 8 p.m.
Did y'all hear that? Say that one more time.
Tell your audience about Black Earth America on Tuesday night at 8 p.m.
Right. Did y'all hear that? It's Black Urban America Tuesday night, 8 p.m. That's Mr. Kenneth Jones for more intense conversation about the political social political state of the black man here in America. I want to thank y'all guys for calling in. I want to thank all listeners.
Really?
Listening in.
All right.
I want to remind everybody dirt, make that change.
You will not be able to stay home, brother. You will not be able to plug in, turn on, and cop out. You will not be able to lose yourself on Skag and skip out for beer during commercials because the revolution will not be televised.